Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Chief, you know there's two things in this world I hate to miss. Lakers game and Rich Rossi Live. You've got to be cuckoo to miss this show. You know what I mean, pal? Hey, wait till you get a load of what Rich is going to talk about today.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. We're so grateful to be with you today and having our guest, Dr. Judy Hollis, on today to talk about food, which we all deal with at least three times a day. And those of us that have struggled with overeating or excess weight or any kind of eating disorder, we're going to really get into some of the spiritual root causes of that. I'll be back in about 20 seconds with Dr. Judy Hollis. Welcome back
hey,
to Richard Rossi Live. Hi, Dr. Judy Hollis. How are you?
Great. Great to talk to you. Hi.
Oh, I'm so happy you're on the show, and we're live now. I found you through a dear friend of mine, Lisa Moss, her and her husband, Joel. They have recovery homes for men that are in recovery and need a transitional place, and they also have a 24/7 phone line with recovery groups, and in one of the groups, Lisa introduced us to your books. And the first one, Fat is a Family Affair, the title itself really struck me. How did you come up with that title, and how is eating in an unhealthy way, how is it tied into the whole family system?
Well, actually, my training came from first working in New York City with drug addicts, and then working in alcoholism treatment programs. And actually, our team was very forward-looking in developing a family systems treatment program for families. This was way back in the early 70s. I was right out of graduate school. And we even came up with the phrase codependency. We were sitting around saying, what shall we call these family members? And here was a big jumping off point for us, which was that we saw that the family was kind of locked in to keeping the IP, the identity, exactly as they were.
Wow. Well, and why would they want to keep them as they are? Is it just not rock the boat and comfort, or why would they want to do that? Oh, are you still there, Judy? Oh, that's strange. I'm not hearing you now, Judy. I don't know what happened if we had a drop-off. If you can still hear me, Judy, I guess we'll have to get you to call right back in. Not sure what happened there, folks. Okay, yeah, we have a little technical glitch. Judy's call dropped. I think she's on a New York cell phone. So let me take a moment.
While she's finding her way back in here, to take a look at, I have her book here, and you know, I've myself gained and lost quite a bit of weight through my life. I've had like 50-pound weight gains and weight losses, and you know, it's been a cycle that I've gone through, and most recently had some surgery for gallbladder issues and drop weight because of the surgery and just some of the issues related to that and what I could and couldn't eat. So I've been really wanting to learn how to eat in a healthier way myself. And food is kind of a comforting thing. I remember in times of my life where things were just kind of whacking out in life, how food was one of those things that was always there, you know. But there's a saying that really speaks to me, which is, it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you. And sometimes something's, you know, eating us up inside, and that really makes us, you know, want to overeat. And hopefully we're getting Judy back on the line here. Let me check in. It looks like she got back on.
Hear me now?
Okay.
Hi, Judy. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. We lost you for a moment.
Yeah, I hope it's not my end. I'm so technically challenged, but I'm glad to be back. And, you know, that phrase you just mentioned, I heard it, was it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you. That may be kind of the difference between just a normally neurotic American dieter and someone we would label with an eating disorder or someone who has more serious issues, is if you are eating because of your emotional distress, then you eat in a different way than people who just enjoy and savor food. In fact, you know, if you've studied the Big Book and it talks about in AA that every alcoholic wants to learn to control and enjoy his drinking, actually I see in today's world that that is the goal for a compulsive overeater. We want to help them to control and enjoy their eating. So that is different than being crazed and obsessive and just needing to stuff down feelings.
What would the difference be, Dr. Judy?
Well, you see, I'm in long-term recovery myself now. I've been maintaining an 85-pound weight loss for 40 years. And
congratulations.
So I've noticed that everything changes, of course. And, you know, your relationship with food, hopefully, if you're really in recovery, your relationship with food does change. And it kind of takes on its proper proportion in your life. You know, in the early days of recovery, we were obsessed, and food is always calling to us, and we're always resisting, and we have to find the right food plan that works for us. And, of course, that changes throughout the years and even daily sometimes. And eventually, food, although we enjoy it, and it does serve us, and it does fuel the engine, it's just food. Eventually, you come to that place in recovery. I want to put that out for the newcomers so you'll realize that you're not always having to be worrying about it. It, you know, we do have to pay attention. We have a lifelong chronic illness, and if we don't stay conscious, it can return in an obsessive manner. But we try to help people stay conscious about what they're doing. And it takes a long time to get that consciousness.
Yeah,
that's why all
these
90-day wonder diets... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's why all these 90-day wonder obsessive diet programs don't really work, you know? Because anybody can do that, even for 20 days. You know, I'm working on a book I might call the 3-day diet. You know, most of us are really good for 3 days, and then on the fourth day, on Thursday, we give it up, you know. So in terms of having willpower, we can do that. But over time, we have to change some in order to have a proper relationship with our substance. And in all the other addictions, a person doesn't have to develop a new relationship with the substance. And that's, again, why I focus so much on relationships and family, because food and eating is the most intimate relationship we have. You know, we take the outside world, we bring it across our boundaries, we digest it with our own juices, and we build new cells, new parts of us. Nothing is more intimate.
Yeah, and it's not like the alcoholic where a lot of times they're just saying, no more alcohol, I'm not going to the bar anymore, because we still have to obviously deal with food every day to survive.
That's right. Yes, and so that's another important issue. In fact, if people go to my website, judyhollis.com, and they sign up, they'll be sent a free list of 12 tips that I think are the bait, and I'll talk about them here if we have time or if we do another show. But that's one of the crucial differences, is that most of the other addictions are about resisting and pushing yourself away from the substance. We have to actually plan the way we are going to go toward our substance. In Overeaters Anonymous, they have a phrase, failing to plan is planning to fail. So we do have to plan, and we do have to account for the fact that we will be eating, and we have to make it fit naturally into our lifestyle.
In your first book, there was a test that we take, asking yourself questions and everything. And I remember some of the questions relating to, are you a person who just inhales food and you kind of just eat without thinking about it? I was the oldest of five kids in a family of seven, and if we ate fast, we'd have a shot at that second helping, you know, that was out there on the plate. And my wife tells me, slow down, for God's sake, let's dine, let's not, done before she's barely taken a bite. And how do we eat in a healthy way? I've heard even people on the spiritual side talk about an eating meditation where they'll take a raisin or a piece of some food and really learn to just enjoy that food rather than just inhale it almost addictively.
Right. Well, I've taught a lot of those classes in mindful eating, and on my webpages, one of the tapes you can get that really takes you through that experience. Mm-hmm. But if I want to just give you a quick hint, one easy thing is to put down your fork between bites.
Mm.
Now, just that is major. You put down your fork, and then the bite you have in your mouth, chew that to liquid. And when it's liquid and you can go and swallow it easily, then pick up that fork again. Now, just doing that will change everything. It's real simple. But it's very
difficult. That's so practical.
Yes, but when you're doing it, you'll notice yourself going to grab for the fork, you know?
Mm.
And so, again, that helps you develop that consciousness I was talking about, you know? Like you're getting conscious of how obsessive your stuffing relationship is, you know? Mm. And once you get awareness, you can change things. So you're well on the road, you know?
Well, thank you. And those of you listening, there's a lot of great resources at Judy's website, and she spells her name with an I at the end, so it's J-U-D-I Hollis, H-O-L-L-I-S.com. We have questions emailing in, and I can also give the phone line if any of you want to call in live. I know a lot of you listeners prefer to just email a question in, but if you want to call live and talk with Dr. Judy Hollis, the numbers open up now. The guest call in 347-637-2379, 347-637-2379. And Dr. Hollis, we'll come back in about 30 seconds just to give us a moment to check in the email questions and open up the line, okay? So hold on. We'll be right back with you for some questions, okay?
All righty. I'm here.
And we'll be right back with Dr. Judy Hollis, author of many books, and we'll get to touch hopefully on several of the books. The first one that I referred to, Fat as a Family Affair, was the first of four. But we'll be back in a moment with Dr. Judy Hollis on Richard Rossi Live.
I know what you're thinking. Since the phone lines are all busy, should I or shouldn't I keep calling? Well, if I were you, I'd keep trying. Go ahead and make your day.
We're back here at Richard Rossi Live. We have a question here that was emailed in from Michael. And I'll read his question to you. In today's world of supersize this and that and instant gratification, how can children and adults today learn to eat normal and healthy portions and also eat smart when they are in relationships with significant others and family that may not be healthy?
Great question. Thank you very much. Okay, number one, you just have to realize, you know, Europeans who come to this country say, oh, my God, your guys' portions are so big, okay?
Mm.
So when you have those big portions, you don't really spend the time tasting. I have found in recent years, I spend a lot of time now trying to taste and savor and enjoy my food. We're not the food police. We're not trying to take food away from people. We're trying to get you to enjoy it more. So just as your caller asked, we do have too large a portion. So usually when I go out to dinner. Well, first of all, when you're first in recovery, your sponsor may ask you to weigh and measure your food just so that you learn that 4 ounces of a protein is about the size of the palm of your hand and 2 ounces of cheese is about the size of two large dice, you know. And you have to kind of retrain your eye around that. Even today in my home, we eat off smaller plates. The salad plate, we don't take out a big 11-inch platter to eat. Our food is on a 7-inch plate. We can get seconds, but We eat off the smaller plate. All of this retrains yourself, and this is all in a book that is a family affair for those who want to learn more. But if you go out to eat at a restaurant, you've got to just realize, I'm getting twice as much as I'm supposed to have, at least of the protein. If you want to overeat on veggies, I say go ahead. Stuff yourself with a lot of good veggies, especially the watery kind, not the high-carb kind. However, I often think ahead that I'm going to be taking half of this meat portion or chicken portion home. And I even take my own little baggie with me in my purse sometimes because I don't like all those floppy styrofoam things. So I'll quickly cut off half of my protein, drop it in my purse while no one's looking in my little baggie, and then I proceed to savor the other half that I have there for myself.
You're probably saving a lot of money, too, stretching out meals in smaller portions.
That's right. I have it for lunch the next day, and it's very cool. Now, in terms of eating with your family or people who might be difficult for you, at large family gatherings for many, many years in early recovery, I always recommend people bring along an OA friend or a program friend, because oftentimes our families will be much better behaved around strangers, you know. So they may stop, you know, pushing food on you. And you just got to remember one thing. When you think they're twisting your arm and they're really trying to make you eat, it's a part of you that also wants to give in, you know. So you kind of set it up that they'll start pushing food on you. You just have to be quiet and very clear with your no thank you. And hopefully not give in. Or decide in advance, I'm going to have a half a piece of that pie or whatever it is. And once you have discussed it with your sponsor, then you can have guilt-free eating. If you're going to eat it, then eat it, be done with it, and back on what's ever normal, usual, and customary for you. You don't have to make it a crazy event just because you had sugar. You just get right back on the track.
Yeah, it's like when I played with Hot Wheels cars as a kid and the car went off that little orange track, we just put it right back on the track. And in your questionnaire, you talk about the guilt with eating in the questionnaire. And you, another question where I was guilty as charged was, do you judge how good a restaurant is by the portion size? And I thought, oh, you nailed me on that one because, you know, I've been one of those people. I paid all this money for this, and look at this measly little thing, you know.
Yeah. And you know,
by the
also,
way, we have callers coming in here. Maybe I should get to them since we're running out of time, Dr. Hollis. By the way, for those of you calling in, we do have one open line at 347-637-2379. Talk to Dr. Judy Hollis. So we're going to line two, and this is area code 780, first three numbers 466, and you're on live with Dr. Judy.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm just curious if you would, not curious, I'm interested, if you would please describe the format of your next, workshop.
Well, actually, most of that is itemized on my website. Just go to judyhollis.com. I only do teleseminars once a year to take us through the high holy days of the year, the holidays that we start in October and we go through until Valentine's Day. It's a full 12-week program. At this year, I may not be doing it, I'm sorry to say. But there is plenty of data and information on the website that can help you. And you can call me at any time when you have further questions. My number is 1-800-8-ENOUGH. That's the number 8 ENOUGH, 8 ENOUGH. But basically, the program is what I did in my treatment centers for years, which is I have a lecture every week about family dynamics, about codependency, about assertiveness training, about the disease concept, about resisting recovery, about the stages in denial. You know, we have to accept we have a lifelong chronic illness, and that's very difficult to accept. So, and all of those lectures are available on the website in the MP3 called Hope for Compulsive Overeaters.
Wonderful.
Yeah, great. Thanks. And, you know, call me if you have questions to help tweak what you're trying to get done for yourself. 800-8-ENOUGH. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling in. One of your books is quite interesting and provocative in terms of the relationship.
Oh, you mean the others aren't?
Yeah, they all are. They all are. But this one really, really had the triple X rating here, hot and heavy, talking about how sometimes our, it's interesting you talk about our appetite for food and sex both being this kind of primal animal type primitive drives. And I didn't really think about this too much before reading you talk about this, that sometimes loneliness or lack of sexual connection with a mate leads to looking to food to fill that need. I know I might not be saying it exactly the way that the book said, but that's really an interesting road that you went down with that.
Well, thank you. And, you know, basically I started the book by explaining how much our society denies the animal self. You know, we think we're these giant heads and we're very rational. We're going to figure everything out. But, you know, the overeater is certainly an example of, wow, there's this whole sensual animal side of myself that needs to be attended to. And so I strongly encourage, especially women, to learn better techniques for masturbation. I say, why is it, I say, reach for a mate instead of your plate, and reach for yourself instead of the shelf. And why do you think it's better to grab a donut than to grab your own self, you know? And a lot of people have found that finding that sexual release of that tension helps them lower that craving, that appetite for food. So we just have to talk like adults here that, you know, whatever it takes not to grab that food. There's no reason why that's a better choice, you know. So, but it also then relates to other issues. It's not just our animal self. It's also our spiritual self, because in that orgasmic state, we kind of leave the planet. The French call female orgasm la petite mort, the little death, and we go to another realm of consciousness. And most of us are seeking that spiritual connection. You know, Carl Jung, when he wrote back to Bill W. about alcoholism, he said, you people have a spiritual malady, and you have to learn to access your spirit with other than spirits, with other than alcohol. And it's the same for overeaters. So that's why the kinds of programs I teach and what's taught in Overeaters Anonymous are so wonderful, because it's about addressing your spiritual self, becoming a more ethical, decent person so that you don't want to punish yourself with food. Food is not a reward and comfort. It's a punishment. And, you know, turning around that whole attitude toward guzzling.
And you can find these resources at judyhollis.com if you're listening in, J-U-D-I Hollis, H-O-L-L-I-S.com. And you can email your questions to richardrossilive@gmail.com, richardrossilive@gmail.com, or call in 347-637-2379. I saw a film recently that really impacted me emotionally, Dr. Hollis, on the great singer Karen Carpenter and the anorexia. How does that relate? I guess there's quite a lot of parallels in OA. I've met friends who are both overeaters and anorexic bulimics. I guess there's a lot of common ground, but what's your opinion on that term or that condition?
Okay, thank you. First of all, I attended Karen's funeral, and people there said, oh, she didn't die of anorexia, she died of heart failure. Well, you know, all of us, the little tag on our toe is going to say heart failure, but what brought us to heart failure? And she, as happens with many anorexics, she died in the dangerous refeeding stage, when they are actually no longer starving and trying to put food back in. And sometimes it's too much of a strain on the heart, that's why it needs to be closely monitored by a professional. But psychologically, these are both the same illnesses. They are both obsessed with food, whether taking it in or giving it up. They're just on opposite sides of a spectrum. I've treated thousands of patients who 1 year could have been anorexic and the next year were obese. And they were just constantly in that control of giving it up format. So I always mix them in the same groups, even though some people think anorexics should be in a different group. You know, I'm concerned about how much in our society anorexics and bulimics are getting the respect and the attention of having an illness. And overeaters are still kind of judged and blamed as just weak-willed moral gluttons, you know? And that is not the case at all. Overeaters need just as much respect and delicate care for their psyches as do anorexics and vomiters. It's just we have such a denial system that we think that the anorexics and vomiters are in worse physical shape, but they are not. We are the fattest nation in the world, and many of our people are dying of heart disease and cancer that are brought on by their obesity. So I just wish we could really get more respect for the disease concept regarding overeaters. You know, I've been at this now for 30 years with this message, and it still seems to not be getting through. Maybe a little.
Wow.
You know
well,
why? It's partly because people kind of laugh and giggle about overeating. Oh, my God, I ate so much last night. Ha, ha, ha. And I don't laugh. I don't laugh when I hear people talk like that.
Yeah, you mentioned in your book comedians. It's been kind of an archetype even in our comedy. You mentioned Jackie Gleason and different ones that, you know, being fat was kind of a funny thing.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I, as a former fat lady, I was very, very funny. I mean, I'm still funny, but out of choice instead of have to and compulsion. But we will often make fun of ourselves first so that other people don't hurt us by making fun of our fat. And you'll see this a lot with fat people. You just notice how they'll kind of put themselves down. And part of recovery is taking yourself seriously, realizing you have a lifelong chronic illness and you need help from other fellow sufferers, and that it's difficult to get out of this thing. You know, another thing is that there's so much in the media about these quick weight loss programs that kind of minimizes how hard it is. And I think the great lesson at Overeaters Anonymous is when you walk in the door there and you sit down, the people say, "There, there, we know how hard it is." Nobody's going to tell you, "Ah, this is easy. I got this licked." No way. You know?
And it's a free program. It's everywhere. Yeah. Even phone meetings. It looks like one last question. We're almost out of time. From Tim in Cleveland is, he says, "When I eat, sometimes I can't stop. And the more I eat, the more I want to eat, and it doesn't seem to ever fill me. When I'm in the throes of that addictive type of eating, what do you suggest?"
Well,
I guess it's
again,
a binge. Would that be called like a binge where he just is going
definitely.
Nuts? Just...
Yes. Yes. And it happens for all of us from time to time over the years. But this is, again, you were just talking about Overeaters Anonymous, and this is why I so strongly recommend that program. For fun and for free, 24/7. And when you can get the wherewithal to just call somebody and say, "Help me, I can't stop." Listen, I've been at this 40 years, and I am a very smart professional in addiction. And in these 40 years, I've had times where I've had to call somebody, just like you, in the middle of a binge and say, "Can you please help me walk this over to the sink and throw it down the garbage disposal and help me flip on that switch and watch it go down. Don't just help me take it to the trash because I may take it out of the trash." Now, I know that may sound gross to all those people who are just so cool and handle their food, but I'm talking to your caller here, and please realize you can't do it alone. Even call me, 1-800-8-ENOUGH. Call me and say, "Help, Judy, I'm in the middle of a binge," and I'll help talk you through it. Most compulsions last about 15 minutes. And if we could have the help of talking to someone else to distract us, even if you're calling someone's machine, that the issue is that you make that call, that you mobilize that part of yourself that says, I'm sick of doing this already. Enough is enough. And like you said, caller, it's enough is enough. It doesn't fill me anymore. I just keep shoveling it in and it doesn't work. And I want to tell you, that's how I was when I got into recovery. I was like a giant sieve. Everything just came in and went right out the pores, and nothing worked to help me feel better. That's a lovely place to start your recovery. And Richard, like you said, maybe you can give people the phone numbers of those phone meetings and all those ways they can access help.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Hollis. We're out of time, but judyhollis.com, everyone, J-U-D-I-H-O-L-L-I-S.com. And I'm going by memory, but I think the Moss's 24/7 phone groups are, I think it's 712-432-8808, 712-432-8808, and the code you press in is 222-1212#. Well, thank you, Dr. Hollis, and thank you for all your books. There's four or five books on your website, and thanks for all that you've done to pioneer this field.
Thank you, Richard. I love talking with you. Let's do this again soon.
Okay, I look forward to it. God bless you. They'll be cutting us off in a couple seconds here. Thank you again, Dr. Hollis.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, and thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Richard Rossi Live. Our next program on the schedule is coming up on Tuesday, June 9th, 10 a.m. One of the great actors of our time that we all grew up with as the captain of the Love Boat, as Murray on Mary Tyler Moore, Gavin McLeod, will be with us June 9th, 10 a.m. And thanks for tuning in to Richard Rossi Live.